the OTB Podcast Network.
Louise Galvin, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good, lads.
I think a European Super League in rugby would be a great idea.
Yeah, pretty it would. If we get some club rugby off the ground, it would be a great idea as well.
Yeah, that would definitely help. Look, Ireland are playing Italy this weekend, and all of a sudden this is one of those kind of fixtures that has a lot invested in the outcome. I know we always talk about performance, particularly, you know, players who've been involved in teams always talk about performance and let the outcome look after itself. All of a sudden it feels like if you're in the coaching ticket this week, you don't really care about the performance, you just want that win.
Yeah, all of a sudden, a bit like the first game, we're really expecting a win with this game, but it's going to come out of performance, I suppose, key performance indicators, like specifically the error count that the girls had the last day. If they can already start to cut down on that, like they, it's all about getting the win, but it's how they do that is what Adam Griggs is going to be focusing on this week against Italy, because Italy are a good side and they're coming off the back of a good away win in Scotland.
How do we traditionally do against the Italians?
Yeah, so last year they were the only game we played in October from the rescheduled Six Nations games that were postponed from the start of the COVID pandemic. And we beat them 21-7. I think our girls had a lot more probably prep done coming into that game than the Italians had, and just looked much sharper on the day. The previous year we went to Parma and lost 29-27 in a high scoring battle. In 2019, and we got the win in 2018. So it's been nip and tuck. They're definitely, they're much stronger than their male counterparts. And what's particularly important is they're also vying for this last World Cup qualifying spot. So it's hugely important that we get another win on them, a back-to-back win, just to try and get that, I suppose, feeling of superiority over them when it comes to the World Cup qualifiers. But Italy are a very strong side. They like to play ball. They like to get over that gain line, throw offloads. I think that's where they probably fell down in October, in that when they weren't as sharp, those offloads weren't going to hand, or they weren't picking them at the, you know, they weren't getting over the gain line and making the right choices when they were trying to offload the ball. And we all know then, you know, that leads to a lot of errors and turnovers, and Ireland capitalised on that. But at the weekend, it was coming off pretty well for them. And although they suffered a bit of a whitewash defeat against England in the opening game, they actually played quite well. Defensively, they were quite strong for 50, 55 minutes. And the scoreline probably didn't reflect the actual game itself in that game. So they've been building nicely. Their momentum is going this direction. They've already had an away win. Whereas I suppose we started with a real peak and had a serious reality check last weekend. So it's really important that the girls dust themselves off and, you know, recovery started on Saturday afternoon. And they really need to refocus for this game, because it's not going to be easy.
Why did Ireland make so many errors last week in your view, Louise?
Look, there was a lot more pressure enforced. The line speed that France brought and that power and the tenacity was huge. And then that just has a consistently knock-on effect. So if you're getting hit behind the gain line, then all of a sudden your forward pod, you're setting up your next phase. Players are going to have to get deeper, work harder to try and bring an extra bit of momentum, get over the gain line, and they're getting hit behind the gain line again. So France brought a huge amount of pressure and they had a really strong defensive system. But then on top of that, we just compounded errors upon errors. I think a few times we tried to throw an offload when we actually hadn't made gain line. We hadn't had a good, strong carry and driven through. The offload wasn't on. And one in particular led to, you know, a French try. And then at times when that happens and you're starting to lose gain line and go backwards, maybe that's when you put boot to ball and you start to play a bit more territory rather than possession. And we probably were a bit slow to change our tactics that way as well. We came in with such confidence. I thought we were, you know, I think the girls just thought we're just going to play out of this. But the French defence was just unrelenting, and that just led to more and more errors, which then led to frustration, and there was a certain amount of indiscipline as well. But the number one reason is pressure, French pressure.
The tactical reaction from Ireland is really interesting. Do Ireland have a game plan that fits their specific set of talents?
I think we do. I think in the first game we really showed that, okay, we're going to get solid front football, and then we're going to use some of the fantastic speed and footwork that we have out in that back line. we probably overtried that without getting that front foot ball against France. And then we're just shifting it on, you know, once or twice that Bavin Parsons actually got the ball. Often she was being double marked. Like there was even one time Stacey Floyd came on, gave a beautiful skip pass to Eve Higgins, who is a fantastic player, who can really spot a gap herself. But you can nearly see she was conditioned to shift the ball to Bavin when actually Eve had half a gap and her player had already shifted on to double mark Bavin. So it's about playing that, you know, go back to playing a little bit of heads up and people taking their own opportunities as well. But I think tactically, number one, we need to control the set piece and not give away as many penalties, as many turnovers. A little bit slow to the breakdown as well against France, a little bit less aggressive. So again, France or Italy are pretty good around the breakdown as well. So we can't, they'll have spotted that as a weakness. Now, having said that, in Italy, considering they won 41-20 against Scotland, they still had 15 turnovers of their own. Again, if you play that offloading game, you do have a tendency sometimes to have a higher error count. But again, that's where the girls can capitalise and either try and shift the ball quickly and actually try and play from those and try and hit them on the counter, or just try and set her up, get her set piece going, work our way into the game, get front football, and then work off first, second phase set piece like we tried to do against Wales and like we did well against Wales.
What do you do about the confidence this week? And you mentioned the sense of momentum, like the competition is so short. It's good to hear that it's possible. The Italians obviously felt that it was possible to recover very quickly from their defeat against England, but at least they had that, the start of that game to kind of cling on to and point to and say, look, our defence was strong. This team that we're coming up against this week, they're nowhere near the same. What does the team this week do to try and zap away the France performance and lean back on the original performance?
Yeah, look, a lot of these girls, they'll have a professional mindset. And we hear Ciara Griffin saying in the interview, recovery started pretty much ASAP as soon as the final whistle went. They'll have been disappointed with themselves, disappointed with the performance, disappointed with some of the individual decision and the team errors as well. So they'll be very keen to go out and, you know, completely change the tune and leave this Six Nations, this tournament, in a positive light. And they see themselves as being third outright, and I think they are, but they have to prove that against their biggest contenders for that spot, which is Italy this weekend. It's a nice little bonus to be playing at home as well. But I think you just have to look at what went well against France. Like, I don't think the scoreline is where the two teams are at. I think France are ahead, but I don't think they're 56-15 ahead with two no-phase tries from turnovers. It was like a sevens game. We can't let that happen again. So I think there's a lot that's fixable within a short space of time, because it's not necessarily huge system errors. It's just some individual errors, some individual poor decision-making, and just like they look back to what they did against Wales. They look back at what they did against Italy in October, and they look to rectify a lot more of that type of play. So they know the Italian girls, that they're not a very new team. They have a lot of them that are quite experienced, which again is a positive for them, but it means there should be nothing, I suppose, nothing coming out of the bag that the girls won't expect. And just going back to basics, stop turning over the ball, don't have poor discipline, and then try and get your set piece going. And then once we get that front football and we earn the right to play, I'd back our backs against theirs any day of the week.
Do you make Ireland slight favourites, it sounds like?
I think certainly having the game switched back to Donnybrook, even though I know we don't have any crowds or anything like that, but I think that gives us an extra bit of a boost, and the fact that it's, you know, it's almost like a replication of the game that happened in October. Yeah, I do make us favourites, and I think I don't mean that to put pressure on the girls, but I think they'd be saying that themselves. They want, you know, they believe they're a better team than the Italian squad, but they're going to have to come out and perform and prove it.
After every defeat that this team suffers, Louise, there is seemingly a big conversation about amateurism and semi-professionalism, especially when they come up against the likes of France and England. How do you think the player group react to those eternal questions, it seems like? Because it is such an easy thing to point to after a big defeat like last Saturday, but at the same time, it's the same conversation over and over again.
Yeah, it is. And I think, look, going back to your first point to that, how do the players react? It's not in their control. You can only control how you prepare yourself individually, how you've learned from the previous game, how physically and mentally prepared you are for the next game. and that has nothing to do with it. So that's how they prepare for it. You have to completely block that out and just not entertain any chat about it, because it's irrelevant at this point in time. And it's for other people, I suppose, sound bites to talk about. And I think as well, like, a lot has been made of the whole professionalism and the money side of things. Like, France wouldn't have had a huge amount more of time together than the girls had in their camps. But what France have is an incredibly strong club structure, a huge amount of girls playing the game, and they're all playing from a younger age. So as much as it is important to have, I suppose, you know, when we're looking at trying to level the playing field in terms of how prepared our squad are, it's not just about throwing a ball of money at the current 30, 35 players that are involved in the Six Nations squad. I mean, for example, if Adam Griggs wanted to, if he picked up, God forbid, 5 or 6 injuries last weekend, and he didn't want to necessarily go with some of the girls out of that 35-player squad, and he didn't want to take any more from the 7 squad because he's taken a lot of players out of there already. Any other player outside of those squads hasn't been playing rugby since the AIL didn't fully start up. They started a community series, which finished last October. So due to, whereas all these other countries have had club, it's been, obviously it's been broken, and at times they've had to stop, but they've had a lot more ongoing club. And even, you know, the priority of getting the domestic game up and running, that's way down the priority list. And that's a huge problem as well. As well as getting our younger girls playing, it's what are our breakthrough players and current players playing at? What level are they playing at? And as well, the visibility and the opportunities that the current international squad gets. So it's not just about making this squad professional. There's a whole other, range of issues beneath it all.
There's one other rugby story this morning. The Examiner are reporting, and they would know that John O'Gibbs is potentially on his way to Claremont to replace Frank Azima as head coach, which obviously would leave a vacancy at La Rochelle for somebody to run both the rugby operations and be head coach. And they're suggesting that O'Gara is close to settling his medium-term future, Simon Lewis reports, with a commitment to La Rochelle for the next 3 years. So that would be a significant increase in his responsibility for all of the rugby operations and his long-term future, medium-term future, long-term, 3 years long in professional sport tied down. It's great for him, and I know obviously people were saying that it would be great to get him back to Munster, and it would be great to get him in the Irish setup, but actually the more coaches we have operating at that level, the better for Irish rugby in the long term.
Yeah, exactly. The more experience he gets working at that level that he can bring back, you know, that we hope he can bring back eventually, the better. So why not? He's obviously in a good spot within the club. He's done fantastic. And just, I know a lot of people are, obviously Rog is well known for his tactical nuance and but it's a lot of recently we're getting an insight into that culture that he creates. That's huge. That's phenomenal. That's the sort of stuff you can't buy. And if he can, when you're the head coach, you lead that culture within a squad, the senior squad. But if you're going above that, more towards directing rugby operations, that actually peters down to the culture within the whole staff, playing staff, underage development. So you have a huge amount of influence and a huge amount of responsibility. But if he can harness that experience and bring it back to Ireland, we'll be all the better for it.
Louise, good stuff. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Louise Galvin giving us some thoughts on Ireland, Italy at the weekend, and the news this morning that Ronan O'Gara appears, according to the Examiner, close to committing his future to La Rochelle for the next 3 seasons. It's 7 minutes past 8. If you want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. 0879 180 180. We're going to talk about the European Super League, the impact on Scottish football, and the potential news that has come in the last 24 hours that the possibility of Celtic and Rangers playing south of the border has now been put firmly back on the table. Right back after these.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.